Bueno, pues Manifesta 8 está ya abierta al público y esta Bienal Europea del Arte Contemporáneo.
Da Murcia e Cartagena, lo speciale di Radio Papesse. Manifesta 8.
Gabi Nkobo is a curator and artist based in Cape Town. She's one of the contributors of the Incubator for a Pan-African Roaming Biennial, a collective of cultural practitioners based in the African continent, who have been asked to articulate, in its complexity, the idea of a Pan-African Biennial. We met her just after the symposium, bringing you the answers before we know the question, four positions regarding the idea of a Pan-African Roaming Biennial, and we asked her about the notion of Pan-Africanism.
There's a curatorial task force. We're really interested in bringing people who would agree differently or disagree differently. I mean, also there's people coming from different backgrounds, other than the countries, but from the focus within the field. It was interesting to have artists who are practicing, whose practices, you know, sort of also engage the norms of display or the curatorial and working with communities directly, like Senam is doing. And Tembi Ngosi comes from an art historical background. Hassan is an artist whose practice embodies many discursive moments that are really interesting. Ato is an artist as well. And Ngone comes from an architectural background, art historical, you know, never been an artist, publishing. So we wanted like this variety of voices to come and speak. I would say, I mean, Pan-Africanism is as wide a term as post-colonial. We are all post-colonial, but we're not post-colonial in the same way. We're all within the African context and the diaspora. We're not Pan-African in the same way. There's like levels of that, and I guess the concept is stronger in the West African context because this is, you know, basically Nkrumah and Ghana. This is the rise of the independent movements in Black Africa. And of course, there's these complexities that came out today, and some of them which we asked ourselves as the task force team, the idea what it means to be Pan-African. And what is this dialogue with Northern Africa? What is Northern Africa? South Africa is a newcomer also in this Pan-African concept, and trying to grasp with the questions and the notions of freedom and democracy and being post-colonial, but also being post-apartheid at the same time, which is different kind of post-coloniality. So the ideas of what it means to be Pan-African are coming back to be renegotiated within the contemporary time frame. So it's not an easy question, but it is a big question nonetheless.
In response to Rashid Arin's comment on the Africa brain drain and the intellectual diaspora, Gabi Nkobo speaks about the cultural dialogue within Africa and about post-black and post-colonial theories.
I think the idea of an African intellectual working in the West, this has been spoken about many, many times. It's sort of a beating horse. There's a lot of people working in the continent. But what tends to happen is that the validating platforms are in the West. So the people in the West, very few of them have more access to these platforms than the people who are not there. But it's not because they are not there. I think this is something that needs to be cultivated, how we speak to each other instead of how we speak to the West. And of course the post-colonial field of study has been very much developed in Western academic structures, up to a point even those people who are very critical in the development of post-colonial studies to start to critique the whole discourse from within. It was really interesting to to think about the framework of the third Guangzhou Biennale, just saying farewell to post-colonialism, towards a post-Western society in terms of what it was suggesting or proposing. For there to be a post, there should be a pre, and then also the moment itself. And I think it would be interesting to think, was there a pre-black, and then there was a black moment, and then there was a post-black moment? Maybe because this term came or originated from America, referencing a very specific history of American, the civil rights movement. At some point, it entered the South African art scene in a very uncomfortable way because it was taking the concept and applying it to South Africa, which was very problematic because the histories are just not the same. You cannot talk about a post-black moment in South Africa right now when these black subjects haven't even begun to talk and already you are declaring this post. Post is a problematic anyway. Because, some people say saying post underlines the importance of the thing that has been deemed post. So if post-black is actually bringing back the question of what it means to be black, rather than saying goodbye to blackness.
The idea of a Western cultural institution settling down in Africa is not new. Museums and national galleries founded by European colonizers are just now under renovation. Starting from the negotiation of the museum models, Nkobo asks to be careful in approaching new European models.
Within the African landscape, this has happened, of course, with the colonial project. The institution, the idea of the museum, is a Western concept. These structures are there. In some areas they work, in some areas not very well. And in some areas they're not relevant. As Hassan was saying, it's really important to think about these institutions and to be excited by them and also to visualize how they can change. For example, the National Gallery in South Africa, which is in Cape Town, has just taken down an exhibition that ran maybe for 6 months, which is called From Pierre Neef to Ku Kulektiv. Pierre Neef was a painter who was sort of the official apartheid government painter, painting landscape that were monumental. So there was that idea of coming into the land and the land is bare and therefore it belongs to us and it's a God-given. So from Pierre Neef to Ku Kulektiv, and Ku Kulektiv is just a collective of artists who are based in Kukuletu, who have been doing interesting things in Kukuletu. But what he did with the exhibition became very, very controversial because the National Gallery was built with a bequest of 400 paintings and prints from an English collection. And the contract, which is supposed to last forever, is that these paintings of sporting scenes in England will always be on show. So there's a room that is called the Bailey Room that is just dedicated to these paintings. And so Rayasen Naidu, who's the first black director of the National Gallery, what he did is negotiate with to talk to the Bailey Foundation saying, listen, you know, let's just take this down. I want to do an exhibition for 6 months. And he was successful. It changed the museum. It moved the craft shop so that you don't have to go through it to go to the exhibition. But for the first time, this thing that seemed like it's unthinkable, because I've worked at the National Gallery before, all of a sudden this, you know, you see something else. You see different histories coming into that space, and the whole museum is telling a South African history from a different point of view or perspective. The newspapers or the media people, there's a lot of negative press, but one prominent one was a headline that said the South African National Gallery reputation is being trashed. You know, what does that mean, to trash an institution by, you know, just having an exhibition for 6 months? But this colonial heritage is very, very strong. Anything you say to destabilize these structures is met with a lot of resistance. So we have to question how these museums function. You know, are these models colonial models? are these models coming from international models that exist internationally, or are they local? If you've never seen a museum in Europe and you are in Cape Town or Johannesburg, they're beautiful structures. The architecture is very, in Cape Town it's very Dutch, but also the court room looks like the museum. So these kind of traumatic histories play into the architecture as well. It's really, really hard to engage with the history of the building itself, the structure itself, with contemporary realities. And then there's a model which has been suggested here of something that exists in Europe, Manifesta, a great model of roaming. But for us as a task force, we had to think really carefully how to approach it and to look at the landscape as it exists within some areas of the African continent. And these are these independent structures that are cropping. Independent, then you have to ask, independent from what? And each of them, the independent from what is a different answer. In South Africa, the question of independence is really strange because there is infrastructure. And it looks like it's working. You know, there's a growing commercial field. There's museums that are intact. And then there's pseudo-independent structures. But everything in the end feeds into the commercial gallery system, into the museum. But there's nothing in between. There's the artist studio, there's the gallery system, and then little pockets of other art worlds that do not, you know, they are not part of the recognizable canon. So, I mean, for myself to start to say that I'm starting an independent space in Johannesburg, I'm really thinking about these questions. You know, independent from what? And I think they are important in suggesting a different way of working for commercial galleries, for museums, what is being collected. Because artists, in the end, they start to work so that their work can fit these structures, which are really strange. They accommodate certain kinds of artworks and not others. So you won't go there and find a happening.
And what about the logistic, infrastructure and education issues?
And you have to think about the economics as well. And at some point you have to say money doesn't matter, but money does matter. It's really nice to do a project when you have money. But I've also learned a lot in projects that did not have money in terms of coming up with solutions. Shipping work for me is a ridiculous idea in that context because it's expensive and logistically a nightmare. And so you spend a lot of time just engaging with these logistic nightmares. Logistics, yes, are part of the whole engagement. But for example, in this moment, I'm not even working with art objects, but working with the ideas that have been raised by the art objects. So I do not want to touch an object. I don't want to ship anything. I want to work with ideas that artists work with, which is a model perhaps coming out of the economic system that is in place, but also a very interesting way of working. And for this proposed Biennale, and for also foregrounding alternative spaces in Johannesburg, Nairobi, Cairo, is to think about what they represent in each context. And if the idea of course, of roaming can be thought about differently, and if these structures can play a role in that, or they can benefit from that kind of engagement in terms of cultivating a landscape in which art, the production of creative production, can improve or can flourish, yeah, to build, to have resources that the artists need, because it's not only about the object, but it's to have the right environment for these ideas to be shaped and to find a room in the National Gallery or in the Commercial Gallery. But I think the platforms, they provide that space to happen, a space that doesn't happen elsewhere. And in South Africa, it doesn't happen elsewhere. I mean, with Cape Africa Platform, it was a very interesting model and a very productive failure, if you can see it as a failure. But the model really took an audience and worked with an audience instead of working the other way. So the audience was built in a lot of people, you know, kind of emerged. I speak about the Gugulective in Cape Town because the Gugulective launched during Cape, the OFF project, you know, and they were in the program called Multimediations, which is a mediation at mediation project, which began with the beginning of thinking about the Biennale. So all these things, every Saturday, people will meet, Tuesday and Saturdays, people will meet and talk about ideas, and this fed into the exhibition. And I think that was a great model. It was the second Cape was happening everywhere, but in galleries. It was happening in taxis, what we call taxis, are mini buses in South Africa that transport people between the townships and the city. Project happened there, project happened in the township school. So it was really a pity that logistically Cape couldn't continue. I mean, the question of education, it varies. I cannot speak for the whole continent. At some point, Zimbabwe had the best education, you know, system that has collapsed with everything else that has collapsed. South Africa is coming out of apartheid, where there was segregation, and there was what was called the Bantu education, which all black people went through, which did not prepare you for much. And there's a lot of people who still thrive, not because of the education, in spite of the education system. And then it differs throughout the continent. I mean, there's also visual literacy. So, I mean, Cape, for example, was very much about looking at this question of visual literacy, negotiating with people in terms of how they read images. Because, I mean, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes you encounter... I was in Sao Paulo, the last Biennale, and there's a lot of work that I missed because it was in Portuguese. And you had to read. It was like this kind of exhibition which has a lot of text, which means that immediately if you don't speak that language, it's hard for you to enter. But with the visual image, and especially the moving image and interventions, it's very possible to get the most amazing responses from people. But also I'm interested in this question of audiences, because I like to work with an audience that knows that it's an audience. And sometimes in the art world, people rely on the audience that has no idea that it's an audience, and it's been counted as an audience to validate a project. The idea of how we evaluate also exhibitions is based on the number of audience that didn't choose to be there. So I think there's a lot to be done in terms of education in general, and for art to be able to enter the education system in interesting ways, via mathematics, via biology, via, you know, and vice versa. But that yet, at least in the South African context, is not happening. Museum curatorial department and education department don't talk as much as they should.
At the end of our conversation, we asked Gabi Ngobo if the Western interest in African art scenario is a matter of new colonization, or if it is our way to foster the freedom of failure and experimentation that in the Western art world is not possible anymore.
If you look at Manifesta, for example, it started with the fall of the Berlin Wall, the dialogue with the West, West Europe and East Europe. How far can you take that? And really, for Manifesta to look at a different kind of dialogue is interesting. It provides something else. But at the same time, what I observed recently, I was in New York, and I happened to be there when, or BC happened to be there when I was there, because I was there for longer. BC Silva from CCA Lagos. And she was getting invited to many institutions, you know, but really important people in the art world, having drinks and gala dinners, and, you know, but the interest was not how to bring Lagos to New York. It was how can we come to you, you know, because yes, there's this people interest in different dialogues, which is produced by a different audience, but also how do you cultivate this audience to be able to decipher those signs, those codes, which are not but they are foreign, perhaps, or they expressed in a foreign way, which can lead to many misunderstandings. And how do you then create a platform where you can talk about these misunderstandings? Best model, the CCA Lagos that BC is engaging with, because it does exactly that. It's a resource. You can go there and access books that you can't access in the official library. There's a space that is independent because it is free to experiment, to fail, to succeed, and look at those, that success, that failure, that experimentation, that lab, and discuss, which, you know, didn't exist in Lagos before this platform existed. So, and you can see how this is shaping how artists from Nigeria think about themselves, what they present to the whole world. I think it's really something to support, that needs to be supported, needs to be supported with infrastructure, with internet access, so that there's not that big divide between those who are always online, which is really taken also for granted. I was in America for almost 2 years. And, you know, this luxury of being online and to go to YouTube, it's great. When I know that I'm going back home, I start to shake a little bit, thinking that, oh my God, you know, I'm not going to be in constant touch with my inbox. Everything's going to go crazy. And I did go crazy. I went home to Durban. And my father lives in a kind of, you know, there's not really much happening there in terms of internet cafes, da-da-da. And I was absolutely not online for like 48 hours, and I was panicking, and my father just couldn't get it, you know. And there's those moments of being post-black, you know, or this concept of being Afropolitan, which also came out into a discourse of thinking about urban Africans. And I couldn't explain this to my father, that I need my Afropolitan privileges. Afropolitan, so it's like a cosmopolitan African who wear their Levi jeans and all-stars and an African shirt and combining all these things and being hip and dancing to Fela and David Bowie. And, you know, I have problems with the concept. There's one particular philosopher who's been writing about, yeah, the best way to think about Africa is from an Afropolitan perspective. I don't know what that means, you know. It's really interesting to go home to those people who've always known you, because all these things don't matter there. They only matter within our circle. So what is that? And the fact that I'm now edgy because I haven't seen my inbox and I haven't updated my Facebook status, you know, maybe somebody wants to be my friend, and, you know, they don't matter. You enter that space, you become something else. You become a normal human being, whatever that means, you know. Platform is happening, you know. I mean, there's also a question of naming. Yeah, we can name it whatever, Roman Biennale. But I mean, this platform is happening. We're not waiting. I think people are working all the time. But at the same time, if we do not name what it is we do, then it's not really happening. So the naming becomes important. So it's just there to formalize the structure, to say, this is what we're doing, but this is happening. I mean, of course, we need more resources, because when you name something, then you invite funders and who are going to think with you and not to dictate to you and not just give you the money, but like there's also this new kind of people in the funding system who are approaching funding differently, and people you can talk with and share ideas, and they can not be bound by policy or mission statements that much, but they're also able to trust the process and experiment. So there's no waiting, really.
www.radiopapesse.org. Arte da ascoltare.